Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owlpost is here and freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and very excited to have back with me the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Drea Kaufman.
Hello! My voice is still all scratchy.
That's okay. Now it just has that sultry thing going on, you know? Like,
I know. Yeah. I always think of Phoebe in the episode where she gets sick and ends up with her sexy voice.
Yes.
I think of whenever I like get a scratchy throat.
You know, it's funny. I was just podcasting the evening with Chris Jones over on The Orb and made a Friends reference there as well. So, you know what's sad is the people who don't know the references anymore. I'm like, oh.
I know.
Makes you feel
I mean,
so
let's
old.
Be honest here. The show doesn't really hold up. It's pretty homophobic and relatively sexist, but... I mean, if you watched it first run, you didn't catch a lot of that because you were probably younger, but yeah.
Yeah. So what's really awesome, though, is that we want to thank everybody who did our drawing, went in and did their entries for the iTunes review contest. Thank you so much. We got so many new reviews, and so we really want to thank you guys. And so we've got two drawings we're going to do. One is for the 1 in 10. And then we'll do one that involved everybody else who had given us a review. We didn't want to leave you out. And so what I've gone through and done is given the 1 in 10 numbers and then the rest of the reviews numbers. And just going to use the wonderful Google random number generator to pick the winner. So it's not up to me. If you don't win, blame Google. It's not my fault. So, all right, so we've got 1 in 10 reviews going here, and clicking the button, and, oh, number 6, which is Kid at Heart 33. Awesome.
Yay!
Kid at Heart 33. Man, I'm so excited here. Kid at Heart 33, all you need to do is you need to go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Owlpost, and send us your address, and then we can ship your book to you through Amazon, and you will get that in a few days after we ship that out. So now we've got, I think it's 34 more reviews to choose from. So I've changed the number generator, and we're going to look for a new number. So okay,
that
here we go.
So
pressing the
diligent
button.
About this, guys.
I was. It took me a while to make sure I got all this right, but
you wanted to make sure it was fair.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So I'm not even picking out of a hat or anything. It's just we're leaving it up to Google. Again, if you don't win, it's not my fault. Number 12, and that is Jedi Fish. So, again, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, give us your address. We will send out your copy of Harry Potter, A Journey Through a History of Magic, and I'm super excited, so you guys are going to have to tell me how this book is. I might have to just order one for myself while I'm over there, so make sure you give us your address, though, so we can send out your reward, and thank you so much for everybody who's been giving us the reviews. Now, keep it up. If you didn't get a chance to win, well, we can do the next 10. We can, and you could have your chance to win. So just go over to iTunes, give us a star rating review, and we'll do another one. So as many reviews as keep coming in, every 10
every
we
10.
Can keep. Yep, we can.
We'll
keep,
give something away.
Yeah,
we'll see what it is at the time.
There you go. Yeah, it'll be super fun. It'll be something Harry Potter related, and hopefully it'll be something that you will enjoy. But you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on thenerdparty.com. We've got on Twitter, make sure you're following us at Join Nerd Party over there on Twitter. You know, you can make sure you can keep up with all the shows. Of course, Owlpost with hashtag Owlpost. Drea and I love talking to people over there. And then, of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, which is a really important place to go. If you want to make sure that you have the opportunity to, see everything that's going on in the Nerd Party and everything that we're doing. And so It is very important. And while you're over there, now the most important thing that is going on the Nerd Party at the moment is that the Nerd Party has been hit by a legal claim, and we need your help to fight this. And so go over to GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty. You can find out more information and the ways that you can help us make sure that all the shows here on the Nerd Party keep coming to you. This has been pretty extensive, so you can check out more on Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Tristan has a great video over there. And of course, again, go over to GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty and find out how you can help support the Nerd Party and make sure all of the shows keep coming to you here. So, Drea, now this is an interesting chapter, chapter 10, because this one is kind of like an interim chapter, but there's lots of fun, interesting things that happen here. And most of it just happens as everybody's back at the Burrow, going back and forth, and it's the mayhem at the Ministry. So we're seeing the repercussions on the Ministry and the people that were there, what happened. And honestly, it really is interesting, because this chapter does set lots of little clues that are going to, again, be important later on in the book.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that happen in a chapter that's really about nothing.
Well, and it's so funny too. I love how they're just, you know, they're leaving the campsite. It's early in the morning and they've gotten packed, and they're passing Mr. Roberts, who, you know, is the muggle caretaker of this land, this property that all of these wizards have been on. And they pass him and he's like, "Merry Christmas." And Mr. Weasley's like, "He's going to be fine. Sometimes, you know, when you have something that big with your memory modified, it can take a while for everything to get back to normal." But it really brought up something fascinating to me. Like the idea of, like, man, if you modified somebody's memory for a memory like that, what happened to him and his family, I can't imagine your brain not being a little wonky for a while.
Well, this is one of those cases where she takes memory modification and the results or ramifications of it. And she sort of, I think, does a little bit of a parallel to like PTSD in that, this man will probably never actually forget what happened to him. He will just think it's a dream, or it will haunt him for some reason that he doesn't understand. Like, the fact that it causes some like distress afterwards and that sort of thing, I always sort of thought of it kind of a little bit like PTSD, like he's always going to kind of suffer from this, because it was a pretty traumatic thing that happened to him and his family. So for me, that's kind of what I always thought when she used the memory modification with muggles and stuff like that. That's always where I kind of went with it.
Well, and the thought of, like, I mean, when we think about what was happening to them, him and his family are hanging upside down in the air by these people with creepy masks on, the whole thought process of what actually happened to them, what they experienced, and then, wiping that from their memory. You know, you hope here that Mr. Weasley's right, that he will be okay in the end, and hopefully they won't remember it. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. You get the feeling, like, can you completely erase something like that from somebody's memory? And might this just be their worst nightmare then, you know, when they have their worst nightmares some of those nights, you know? Like, so yeah, it is something that I enjoy the fact that she takes very seriously here what happened. And it also, I think it just adds to the seriousness of
what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, what's great about this chapter is that it takes what happened there and continues to expound upon it and show just how awful it was, and just how scared this is starting to make the wizarding community, that these things are starting to happen again. So she's picking up where we left off with the whole thought process of Mr. Weasley explaining why people were so afraid and everything. And now we're kind of seeing that play out here at the Ministry as people start pointing fingers about, you know, who did what and why things went wrong and all that stuff, you know. So I think that's really interesting.
I also forgot how early on in this, story, not just this book, but this overall story, that she really starts to show the fear reaction, the like panic, just utter kind of chaotic response to the fear that, you know, Voldemort had instilled in them from the last time around, and mm-hmm. how big a part that's going to play going forward, and how we don't really get much of that in the movies. It just sort of happens,
yeah.
and it's happening. Here it's already starting to panic. It's already starting to cause people to say and do dumb things or things they just haven't thought through. So it's really interesting to be reminded of how early she kind of starts weaving this into the story, and how something as simple as someone producing it as what they think as is just a joke right now, like, is causing ministry-wide panic. And for, you know, Mr. Weasley hasn't worked this long and hard since, you know, Voldemort was here last. So it's just really interesting. And I was reading through it and I was like, oh yeah, no, we start getting that atmosphere of like mm-hmm. horror and fear and nobody wanting to believe anything, like, right now. Like midway through book, or early on in book four, yeah. really.
Well, and you know, when they get home, I love how Mrs. Weasley just is like giving everybody a hug, and specifically the twins, and she's talking about how, and it's just so sweet. She's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I was so worried that something would happen to you, and the last thing I ever said was just about you didn't get enough owls, and they're like, it's okay, Mom, we're fine. You know, like, but, you know, what's it's funny, it's a cute, heartwarming scene, but actually the idea of, like, the thought, people are starting to have to think like that now, again, which is, if I lose somebody, what was the last thing I said to them? Like this is, there's a real sense of weight here. It's not just a funny, sweet scene. It really is, oh my gosh, you know, anything could have happened to anybody there, and they could be dead, you know, like that. That's it's not a joke. And so I really like, again, there's so many different layers to what's happening in this chapter. And it really is, I think, doing a great job of just kind of ratcheting up the tension.
Yeah, I mean, I like that at the end, near the end of the chapter, they kind of call back to this, trying to make her feel better, you know?
Yeah, and they all laugh, which is great. I love that.
And like, everyone laughs, yes, because they need that. And I feel like a little bit of that is true, right? Like, when that happens, for real, you need some way to sort of diffuse that, like, tension that builds with it, because it could be real, right? And everybody knows that, but you don't want to sit around thinking about that all the time. Like, if we all sat around thinking about, well, what would happen if, I think we'd all just, I mean, that's where you get people who are just obsessive and at home and who can't see past that. You know, you have to, for a healthy mindset, you have to be able to like let go of that and know that it's real, but that you can't fixate on it. You're going to drive yourself mad. And so I think it's sweet that the twins kind of know that, and mm-hmm. even at their age, and are kind of like, well, let me help Mom feel better, right? Wouldn't you feel bad about me about yelling if this was an order form and that was the last thing you ever did, you know? It was really sweet, but it was pretty heart-wrenching to think, you know, that they're all there, so they know it's just, and of course the kids don't really know what's happening, so they're just like, well, someone put something in the sky, and mm-hmm. it was like, no big deal, like, I don't know why you're freaking out. But I think that's just a good depiction, and it kind of plays on the whole part from the last chapter where they were talking about, if you saw the dark mark above your house when you came home, you would be afraid, yes, to go inside. Yes. It was the other side of that, right? If you saw the dark mm-hmm. mark somewhere else and you couldn't see if your family was okay, like, you would be afraid too. So it was interesting to see the kind of two sides of that. And so what really gets me here is, I mean, these books aren't that old, right? It's like 1995 here. And yet we still don't have any wizarding form of communication. Like, we don't have a cell phone or a pager or a payphone. Like, there's no way for him to have, or even a magical way for him to have let Mrs. Weasley know that they were fine, which I just find so fascinating and would never have happened mm-hmm. nowadays, where everyone, including like little 7-year-old kids, have cell phones. Not that I think that yeah. that's right, but I mean, it happens. You know, like, I had someone at work one time tell me they couldn't come into work because their phone died and they were you know, unable to call and tell me they couldn't come into work. And I was like, you can walk down to the gas station on the corner by your house and buy a cell phone charger. Like, that exists nowadays.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like, there's just no excuse anymore to not be in contact with the people that you love. So I find it interesting to go back to a time where they didn't, where like the cell phones weren't mm-hmm. as prevalent, right? And to be able to be like, oh, I have to worry about that person now because I can't even contact them.
Right.
I feel like there should have been something because it's still the 90s and it's not that long ago. But I find it interesting what some of those things, like we talked about, you know, mm-hmm. wizarding taxes, just a few things that are in our everyday life that I feel like are kind of missing from the wizarding world that would help resolve some of these problems. But
I will say we will see in the fifth book, we will see some forms of that kind of communication. But it hasn't come around yet. So, yeah. I think that is, yeah. There are ways that it can happen. The one way I'm thinking right now specifically is that, you know, obviously we've talked to Sirius through, you know, the flu powder, before. So,
oh, that's true.
Yeah. So that's happened. So that's one way you could have done it, or, you know, you can always send an owl, and then there will be another way that we will see in book five. So there are some ways to do that. It
isn't as convenient as picking up.
No, it's not quite as convenient as like,
message.
Yeah, no. But
and I was curious that the whole time they were at the World Cup and this was all going on because of how worried Mrs. Weasley was. I was worried if the hand on the clock was pointed at directly at 12 for all of them while this was happening, which we learn in the book what the different hands on that clock mean in the Weasley's house, that there's at work, there's at home, there's, you know, at Hogwarts, yeah, like there's in transit.
Danger, yeah.
And then there's 12 is mortal peril. So I'm wondering if during this time they were where that clock hand was and if it was pointed at that for them. And I'm curious if it's ever been there for Ron while all these other things have happened to him at Hogwarts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm wondering where that clock hand was and how much they really rely on that.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a great question. And I think maybe that's the one way of like Mrs. Weasley kind of knowing what's going on with her family. But it also seems like it causes a lot of worry.
It would cause me a lot of anxiety. Yeah. I'd be like, oh my God.
One of the interesting things too is that when they get home, they all kind of like are hanging out and they see the paper, the front page of the paper, and it's this article that's been written by Rita Skeeter, and he is livid. Mr. Weasley is just like, that woman has it in for the Ministry of Magic, and Percy
is just as angry.
He starts going off about how blah 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 blah, and I love it. Bill's like, do us a favor, Percy, shut up. Like, it's fantastic. But we get our second mention of Rita Skeeter here and that she's really causing problems for the ministry. And Mr. Weasley, because of everything that's happened, he's like, I got to go in to work. And Molly's like, but you're on vacation. He's like, I know, but I got to go in. And the rest of this chapter, you see, is that Mr. Weasley and Bill and Charlie and Percy are barely home for the rest of this chapter because they have so much happening and so much going on at the ministry, trying to take care of this, trying to pick up the pieces. It's awful. So, I mean,
what's interesting is like all they're really doing is handling all the complaints from people, right? Mm-hmm. Because Percy keeps talking about his desk is like totally scorched everywhere from the howlers that blow up. Is this the first time we see a howler too?
No, we saw one, remember, all the way back in book two where Neville had forgotten something. But
and they steal the car.
Yes.
They got a howler when they stole the car. Okay.
Yep, that too. Not Neville, sorry. Ron. Ron got the howler, yes.
Because his desk is covered in scorch marks. And then it sounds like it's just Mr. Weasley trying to make up for being this unnamed source in Rita Skeeter's article. Because I don't know what else there is to do, really, besides see if you can do an investigation to figure out what happened. But that doesn't take the entire ministry, you know?
Right.
So it's mostly just a PR nightmare that they're trying to, like, douse, which should have nothing to do with Mr. Weasley. So, you know, I find it's interesting. It's almost like his guilt of he didn't really do anything wrong, but he feels like he needs to be there in a greater way than he should, because he has this, like, sort of guilt about accidentally saying something that could have gotten everyone in trouble, and that he could have been named and all that stuff, which I think that's something that is really relatable for some people, like that extra burden they feel that is being put on by them and not anybody else. So it was again, we're really hearing a lot about the Weasley family character in these first few chapters, particularly Mr. Weasley.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is something that's really cool. It is also interesting that finally Ron, Harry, and Hermione sneak off, and Harry finally admits what happened at the very beginning of the book, where he had this, what he thought of as maybe a dream, but maybe not. And the fact that his scar has been hurting. And my favorite part of it is that Harry thinks in his head, yep, they reacted pretty much the way I thought they would.
Exactly how I thought they would, yeah.
Awesome.
Well, and I love that Ron's question was like, he wasn't there, right? Like, he wasn't like at your house. And you're like, no, he wasn't at my house. No, but he was in my dream.
What's fascinating here is that you know, we get Harry telling them, you know, I'm really worried because, you know, of what Trelawney said at the end of last year. And Hermione's just like, oh, you don't believe that, old hag. And Harry's like, you weren't there.
This was different.
This was totally different. This is like a real, like, she was in a trance. And everything that she said has already come true. And it's so interesting because Hermione just is kind of trying to brush it off. Yeah. But what I really like about this, you know, obviously, I was even watching that special Harry Potter History of Magic, and when they got to this part of magic, J.K. Rowling even said, you know, for her in the books, this is not a form of magic that she puts a lot of stock in for people, but that doesn't mean you can't get lucky. And so there are those points, obviously, it seems like, where Trelawney, something does happen, you know? And so what I love is that, you know, Harry recognizes the difference, right? He's been in her class enough, so he recognizes the true difference between when she's just BSing and when this is real. And so I love this argument that they're all having, and it doesn't really resolve because Ron's like, you know what? Let's go play Quidditch. And I love her. Hermione just kind of storms out of the room, muttering something that she says sounded very much like,
boys,
you know? Yeah. So I think that's fantastic. And then, you know, we get the family, finally things have settled down slightly, and we start to hear about what it's been like at the ministry with, you know, Percy talking about all the Howlers on his desk. He brings up somebody named Mundungus Fletcher, who is, put a claim on his, you know, tent that got ruined.
Tent.
Yeah, that, you know, he's like, I totally know he didn't have that tent. But, you know, all of these things, and I just think it's fascinating. And the chapter ends by us talking about one of the things they're talking about, which is we get into elves again with Hermione and Percy going back and forth, which
poor Hermione in this chapter, man, like, she does not have anybody on her side right now. She fights with them about Trelawney, she fights with Percy about house elves, she's just like, she is her own little lone wolf in this chapter.
Well, and what I like about the chapter is that it shows that Hermione isn't always right.
Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting thing about this chapter. You know, Hermione is wrong about Trelawney and what happened there, but she's right here. And what's fascinating is You know, they, I think it's Harry in the chapter who thinks to himself, this is interesting because usually Percy and Hermione are much more on the same side.
Yeah.
You know, because they're rule followers.
They're similar.
Yeah, in that way. And so I think that it is really interesting. And of course, you know, Hermione is so upset because, you know, Winky, to her, she sees her as just a slave. And obviously, that's not hard to think of when you see the way that Mr. Crouch treated her, you know?
And the way we know that the Malfoys treated Dobby.
Exactly. So the two house elves that we've had familiarity with now, we've seen them be mistreated. And so, you know, that definitely colors everything that we're thinking of. And so I think that's really interesting.
The end of this chapter sort of, I don't know, I sort of feel like at some point during the chapter, almost every character had some sort of like brewing over moment. I mean, there's been a lot that's happened to them this summer. There's like this high tension in the house and in the wizarding community right now. Like everyone sort of had their moment where they sort of lost it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Percy's going on and on and on, and Bill's basically like, would you just shut up, right? You know, Mrs. Weasley's super, super upset at the beginning. The twins make her laugh, but you know there's something going on there too. And I feel like this moment is when both sort of Percy and Hermione sort of lose it a little bit. And, you know, Hermione's a little more emboldened than she maybe normally would be. And Percy's a little more intolerant than he would normally be. And I just found it really interesting. It just the whole chapter, tensions are so high. And you just see these super big versions of these characters and their personalities. And in such and Mrs. Weasley's doing her best with it. She's just like, hey, let's change the topic here. And I got your books and blah, blah, blah. Why don't we go pack? And, you know, but it's just true testament to like the effect something so small as a callback to a horrible event can have on this sort of what you'd call like normal wizarding family, right? Like they're kind of supposed to be this everyday normal wizarding family. So it's really interesting to see, and it sort of plays into the PTSD and the trauma that's caused by big events in history and in the world, and just really setting the stage for, you know, what we can kind of expect to come. And it's got this like sort of dark edge to the whole chapter. You're sort of on the edge of your seat and a little like anxious while you're reading this, because you're like, oh my gosh, the tension's so high, I can feel it while I'm reading it. So it's so interesting, and how she was able to do that in such a short period of time.
Well, and it is really interesting too, because, here at the end of the chapter, you know, as you were talking about, Miss Weasley is, you know, giving them their books, then all that stuff. And this is where we get the introduction to the fact that there's going to be something at Hogwarts that requires them to have dress robes, and Ron loses it with the fact that his dress robes look like ridiculous and frilly, and why does Harry have these beautiful, you know, dress robes, and I've got this thing that looks like it belongs to Ginny. And this is the moment where they both lose it, Miss Weasley and Ron.
And Ron,
they just have a yelling match, like, which is, you know, classic, you know, mother and son interaction, like how she's just like, you know what, fine, go naked. Okay. And
take
Harry,
pictures.
Make sure
I'd
you
love
get
to
me
see
a picture.
That.
Yeah. Because I want to see that. And it's just, you know, it is a really interesting thing to see. But I think it's also something that's really fascinating, because we keep getting hints that something is going to be happening at Hogwarts now that is possibly just as big as what we just experienced, which we, you know, had the Wizarding World Cup. So of Quidditch. Are we, you know, what could possibly be that big that we're going to have at Hogwarts? Because we've never seen anything like that at Hogwarts before. So she really is kind of leaving us on an interesting note. And I think the last part is that this really capitalizes Ron's feelings at the moment about who he is and his family. And the fact that he's tired of being in a family where he feels like everything that he owns is rubbish.
Yeah, and that a lot of stuff he gets a second hand, and it literally spells out what Harry's sort of been dancing around the whole time. And he's like, he would happily have split all the gold in his vault with them, but they would not take it. And, you know, and there's like just this part of you that wants to be like, please just like do it. Like, I know it sounds terrible, but, you know, he's like, he wants to help, but he knows he can, but he can't. So it's just so, it's so hard to for him to watch. And every time now he like turns away and doesn't look anymore. You know, he's getting older and he's getting those like social skills where like he can't be there for that because it makes him uncomfortable and he knows it makes them uncomfortable and all this stuff. So it's just one more time that sort of pops up and happens. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to read. I can't imagine being there. It'd be hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I think sort of understand to Ron's feelings, you know. My family didn't grow, we did not grow up with, like, we did not have nice cars growing up. You know, the vacations we took, we went camping, you know, like it was, we did not have a lot of those things that other people did. We didn't have video game, you know, systems and stuff like that. Like, we didn't grow up with that stuff, you know, because my parents didn't have the money at the time, you know. So I can kind of understand that feeling that Ron has. And it is an awful feeling, you know, because, you know, you don't want to. Ron's not mad at his family, really. He's just mad because he doesn't have what other people have. And it's easy as a kid to just compare yourself to others and not feel like you live up. And he hasn't been able to realize that that's not really important in the end. It's hard when you're 14.
He hasn't put together like what you have. He wants to have more, but hasn't put together what you have to do to have more, right? Like, he hasn't quite put together what would sacrifice for that to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, Mrs. Weasley would have to go work. His dad would have to not be his dad. They'd have to change something. Like, there's so much that would have to happen for that to be the case. His dad wouldn't like his job anymore. Like, there's just so many things that go into that, you know, but he's 14, so he's not thinking about that. He's just thinking about, gosh, gee, golly, wouldn't it be great if my family made more money and I didn't have to be in these horrible, frilly maroon dress robes, because don't they understand that that's horribly embarrassing for me? And, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but don't you understand? And he doesn't. So it's just, it's, you know, a teenager. And being a teenager.
Yeah, I really like the way you put that. You know, the fact that, you know, one of the reasons that Mr. Weasley probably doesn't make as much money at the ministry is because who he is character-wise. And he's not willing to do some of the things that we'll see throughout the series as we move on. This isn't really a spoiler, but we're going to see other people at the ministry and their connections and everything. And they're people that seem to, you know, cross the line between ethical and unethical, right? Yeah. And Mr. Weasley doesn't cross that line. And therefore, he doesn't probably get as much respect as he is due in the ministry because of that. And not only that, but we also know that Mr. Weasley is somebody who is very in love with all things Muggle.
Yeah. And there isn't a lot of value on the importance of that.
Right. Even from normal wizards, you know? Like, yeah. There is kind of a bias towards, you know, non-magic folk. And so I think, it's really what we see here is just a lot of things happening. And again, I love that she's just kind of adding all of these layers as the kids are getting older. And I think that's one of the neat things about the books is that they continue to get deeper and deeper as we move forward through the series, because the kids are starting to have to deal with things that, you know, they weren't dealing with before, right? And they didn't maybe wouldn't even have thought about, but now that they're getting older, they are. And I think it makes it a richer experience as we move forward.
Well, and I think they're dealing with it earlier than people think they should have to deal with it, right? Like, we get a lot of things that are still sheltered, even in the last book, like, oh, don't tell Harry that, he, you know, he shouldn't have to deal with the emotional burden of that and stuff. But, you know, they're hitting real life adult things super young, and they're bringing a different perspective to it. and they're coming at it from a different place. They don't have the context behind the dark mark to understand how significant it is. You know, they don't have all this, and they're bringing sort of a naive approach that actually will probably be beneficial in the long run. And it helps with the coping, right? They don't quite have this, understand this impact of what's happening. So it's really interesting. And this chapter is very adult from a kid's perspective, which is why I feel like the tension is so high, because we're adults now and we're like, oh my gosh, like we know what this really means. And the kids are like, well, let's go play Quidditch. Like, they know something. They know more than that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
no, I absolutely agree. So I think it's just a great, it really is. It's a great chapter. And it leaves me excited, obviously, to keep continuing, as next week we'll be aboard the Hogwarts Express and be making our way back to school. So that's exciting. So, Drea, though, you know, before that, if anybody wants to catch up with you, see how things are going, see baby pictures, where can everybody find you online?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, as well as Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network. I'll be on the show called Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we talk all about Star Wars each and every week. It's so much fun, so make sure you check that out. You can also find me on the Trek FM network talking about The Orb, which is our Deep Space Nine podcast, all about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do that with Chris Jones on the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show. So if you enjoy Harry Potter talk or any of the other fandoms that we all love, DC, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, Lord of the Rings, all of those things we're talking about over on the 602 Club. So make sure you check that out. And then last but not least, I'm over on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.